Hi, Quincy here. I am a psychologist, and we are talking about mental health throughout all of our episodes. If you are needing support, please go and find that. You can find resources at our website, multiplesourcespod.com. What you are learning here should not be a substitute for your own mental health treatment or support. No patient-psychologist relationship is implied by virtue of listening to this podcast or by contacting us through any means. Okay. Now back to the fun stuff. Since the recording of this episode, there's been a few important updates to the Britney Spears conservator case. The discussion that we have regarding the laws and the nuances of this case are still relevant, but there's been a few important developments along the way. It's been recently reported that Britney Spears has two separate conservators, a personal conservator, Jody Montgomery, and a financial or an estate conservator, which is still her father, Jamie Spears. On August 6th, Mrs. Montgomery recently made a public plea for Jamie Spears to step down from his role as the estate conservator, stating, quote, "It does no good, it only does harm," end quote. On August 12th, Jamie Spears agreed to step down from his daughter's conservatorship after 13 years after his original appointment as both her personal and estate conservator. A timeline for his actual removal from this role has not been released. In today's episode, you'll hear how conservatorships work, how Britney Spears' timeline played out, and why we support the hashtag FreeBritney. We discuss how conservatorships are meant to support someone's mental health recovery, not imprison them indefinitely. At this point, it's difficult to parse out how her never-ending conservatorship has negatively impacted the very mental health it was supposed to aid. So let's jump in.
Welcome to the Multiple Sources Podcast. I'm Gregory Allen Thornberry.
I'm Quincy Gideon.
And I'm Jazz Robertson.
And we are here to bring to you a panoply, a veritable cornucopia of inputs about the ongoing Britney Spears conservatorship question. Fortunately for us, we have a PhD in psychology who knows all about what really happens behind the curtain on these things. That would be our very own Dr. Quincy Gideon. And we want to unpack this from the sorts of critical inputs that we and outputs that we hope characterize this show. The religious ones, the psychological ones, the political ones, the economic ones, the socio-cultural ones. There's a lot of ones. So with that in mind, Quincy, break it down for us. One of the things that I've not seen a lot of coverage on is what actually conservatorship is, and how it gets enacted and in what cases, because, you know, it gets referenced in all of the media coverage, but it's like people don't know what's behind the thing that is being talked about. So,
okay.
Let's break it down.
So let me give you a little bit of background. I am trained as a clinical and a forensic psychologist. So part of what I do for a living is to evaluate people in any sort of legal setting. And a conservatorship is part of that. So I have a lot of knowledge about what happens in Los Angeles courts, which is where I work, but also where Britney Spears is conserved. So I'm going to be as specific as I can without knowing any of the background or the actual information of what's going on inside of her case, because most hearings have been closed to the public, although there have been some that have been opened up, and we'll talk about that today. But this is not how conservatorships work across the board. There are lots of different nuances. Conservatorship is essentially a court
case that is brought before a judge where there is some sort of question about whether a person can take care of themselves, like keep themselves safe every single day, or take care of their finances. And so over time, the conservatorship laws are going to be changed based on case laws, different cases come into place. So I'm talking specifically about Los Angeles court systems and California. So that's important. So if you're thinking about this, but you live in New York, rules are going to be a little bit different. If your Aunt Sally was under a conservatorship in Georgia, also going to be a bit different. So we'll start there. So a conservatorship, the way that these happen is that somewhere along the way, there's questions about whether someone can take care of themselves. There are two different kinds of conservatorships. I'll kind of go into the different parts of those. But a conservatorship can happen because of severe mental illness, because of dementia or a memory decline, or general decline in cognitive state, or chronic substance abuse issues that are not going to, substance abuse issues that have caused some sort of deterioration in the brain that prevents that person from ever regaining capacity again. So somewhere along the way, someone says, uh-oh, this person is not able to take care of themselves, and a petition is started in the courtroom. Based on the petition, the attorneys that are present, the mental health professionals or other professionals like medical doctors that are brought in to evaluate that person, then a judge makes some sort of judgment whether that person is going to be put under conservatorship or not. There's two different kinds of conservatorship, and this is the most important part of the Britney Spears case and the part that gets me the most fired up. There are two different kinds. There's a probate conservatorship, which is a conservatorship that is started under the impression or understanding that a person is so incapacitated by cognitive decline or chronic substance abuse issue that causes cognitive decline or some sort of physical ailment that they require someone to make their decisions for them and to take care of them in some way. An LPS conservatorship is when a person has such severe mental health symptoms at that time that the conservatorship was filed, the petition was filed, that they are put on a temporary, it's only for 1 year, LPS is only for 1 year, they're put on a temporary conservatorship in order to temporarily take care of whatever's going on while they receive treatment, they get better, they get their symptoms under control. So presumably, Britney Spears is under a conservatorship for her bipolar disorder. I have not diagnosed her. These are just the reports that have gone on in the media that she has some variation of bipolar disorder. And so therefore, her conservatorship should actually be an LPS conservatorship, which means that some mental health professional was sitting in front of her at some point and said, uh-oh, she's not able to take care of herself, and they file for a conservatorship in the courts. And typically what happens is that someone in the office of the public guardian, which is a very specific job, it's a civil servant position, is appointed to manage that person's appointments, their major life decisions, and their financial decisions. But that expires after a year. Britney Spears is under a probate conservatorship, which means that somewhere along the way, there has been some petition that says that she is never, ever, ever going to regain competence again, and therefore it is permanent. And all of these steps have to be taken in order to undo something that was put in a permanent conservatorship or a probate conservatorship. Okay, that was a lot. Tell me what your questions are.
Amazing. Wow. So helpful. But I mean, just immediately, I mean, I want to know more about the background of how she got here. And maybe Jazz can help a little bit with that for us. But this is kind of terrifying that this exists. Like, I understand why it exists, but the fact that it's like every nightmare dystopian movie where you know, somebody declares you to be mentally incompetent and then you're committed and you lose your whole life. I mean, we all have nightmares like that.
Well, this is what gets so sticky about the Britney Spears issue, is that the conservatorships are so hard to get. I mean, someone can literally not be able to dress themselves and eat properly, or pay any of their bills or take care of themselves in any way. And I will start a conservatorship application, but by the time that they get to court and they're evaluated, they have improved in some way. Therefore, no conservatorship. That person then declines. I see them again. I have to apply for another conservatorship. So this happens. I've had some people that I have applied multiple times because they are so incapacitated. This mostly happened when I was working in a psych hospital inside our jail in downtown Los Angeles. But they're just people that struggle so much to keep their mental health symptoms under control. But so the fact is that it's very hard for people who actually need this. But there's so many checks and balances set up. Where they're, I mean, you have to have a high level amount of training in order to even do these evaluations. No one without a doctorate could even do a conservatorship evaluation. They can apply for it, but a psychologist has to be the one that looks at, or a psychiatrist has to be the one that evaluates. And so the fact that this has, it's the wrong conservatorship, as far as I can tell, and the fact that it has gone on for so long without any of these checks and balances sort of flaring up and getting in the way, I think is deeply problematic. And that's what makes me so suspicious about how this has all happened.
So Jazz, could you, I mean, there's a timeline here. Can you help me understand the timeline of, like, applied to Britney Spears? How did she go from being like a mouseketeer to where we are in 2021?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, because I had to kind of go back and do a little bit of digging myself. So, you know, we remember Britney from probably around 2007, 2008, from out of nowhere, pictures resurfaced of her with a shaved head. And it was kind of going around like, oh my God, like, you know, what happened? How did she get here? So, you know, backtracking a little bit, as you mentioned, she was on the Mickey Mouse Club back in the early 90s. She was on Star Search, which, for all the kids listening, this was around before American Idol and everything else.
Star Search, oh my God.
Yeah.
You remember Star Search? She was on this thing. You know, like, she grew up, she was put in the talent shows. She did all of these kinds of things. When she was 18, she shot to fame with her debut album, by the way, Baby One More Time, sold millions of records. She toured nonstop, put records out just about every year, I think. And everything seemed to be going pretty well. She was the host of The X Factor. Like, remember that one? That was another one that was on, you know? She had a Vegas residency.
Oh, by the way, on the Vegas residency, shout out to another podcast, which only had one season, but is my favorite podcast. It's called Mystery Show. And yes. Starlee Kine, who has been on This American Life, and she, every episode, she takes on a mystery that somebody approaches her with. She doesn't decide. People reach out to her. And in this particular, my favorite episode of Mystery Show, and the whole season is mind-blowingly amazing, and I hope it comes back for a season two. There is a mystery show in which there is an author who has written, like, sort of a psychological health self-help book called To Feel Things, that is this author's second book. The first one kind of did really well, but the second book went nowhere, like no sales, dropped off the face of the earth, totally obscure. And then, like most authors, like, you know, I'm an author, do you have a Google search for any time your name pops up. And she got a Google alert of Britney Spears coming out of a restaurant holding her book To Feel Things. So the mystery show is them getting to the bottom of how Britney Spears would have gotten a hold of her totally obscure book. I highly recommend it. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, not,
that's so fun.
Not at all. That actually seems to be pretty pertinent because, you know, as we are, you know, talking about her timeline here, you know, once she shaved the head, she had her kid sitting in her lap while she was driving. Everybody's thinking, what's going on with Britney? In 2008, she was put under a psychiatric hold twice, I believe. And Quincy, you'll probably know about whatever this means, but it's known as a 5150 hold.
A 5150.
There it is. What is it? What's a 5150?
That's a Van Halen album. So you're gonna have to
stop it.
Is it?
You're gonna have to explain to me what 5150 is outside of, oh my gosh, David Lee Roth has left Van Halen and now we're stuck with Sammy Hagar. That's my only context for 5150.
Well, let me tell you what a 5150 is, and then maybe it'll help you understand why that album was named what it was.
Okay.
So a 5150 is a 72-hour involuntary psychiatric hold. So it means that someone is imminently, which means that there is no other option. They are going to hurt themselves or hurt someone else. And they are put under or gravely disabled. So there's DTS, danger to self, DTO, danger to other, or GD, gravely disabled. Those are the three criteria that we look for in order to involuntarily commit someone to a mental hospital for 72 hours for either observation, but mostly treatment. So they're going to get a lot of meds. They're going to get something to help them calm down, come back to earth. This is the most common with someone that has a really out of control bipolar or mood disorder, like depression or bipolar, or they're experiencing some sort of psychosis, which makes them difficult to manage. They are definitely not living in reality and therefore cannot take care of their most basic needs, like hygiene or eating or anything like that. Keeping themselves safe, that's another part of gravely disabled. So she was committed. She was under a psychiatric hold. I don't know this, but I believe that there were a couple of different psychiatric holds. What happens with psychiatric holds is that you are typically put in on a 5150, which is the 72 hours. If you have been unresponsive to treatment and still a danger to yourself or someone else, or you're gravely disabled, then it's extended for 2 weeks for a 5250. And by the way, a 5150, you just have to have an LPS certification, which is an extra training. Do you know all of the legal ramifications of taking someone's rights away? And then you have to, that has to be sort of supported by another practitioner. So two people have to say this person is gravely disabled, DTO, DTS.
So there is some sort of like, it's hard for that part of it to be a conspiracy. It's not like it's just one person.
Right.
You have to have, it's like double blind, like in Oxford exams,
right,
where somebody else is like, this professor isn't trying to get isn't out for this student.
Right. Right. There has to be two licensed professionals that see this person and testify that they, on a piece of paper, you write out a hold, that they are unable to keep themselves safe or take care of themselves. Now, police officers also have the LPS certification, and so they can write holds.
Oh
now,
my gosh.
Once they get,
what?
Once, yes.
That is terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. They can also write
holds.
Police
officers can do this?
They can write the holds, the temporary holds, to get someone to
the
hospital.
I get it.
I mean, I think that this points to like the bigger issue of police officers being sort of the frontline mental health workers out in the streets. They're coming in contact with people who are belligerent and scared and paranoid,
yeah,
and high and all kinds of stuff. And so they have to have some sort of power to do something, but it is certainly questions come up,
yeah,
when we think about them having that much power. So, but that takes them to, that gets the patient to the hospital and then they're evaluated and a doctor decides whether they can be kept under the 72-hour hold. Okay. So 72 hours is approaching. The medicines haven't kicked in. they usually take longer to kick in anyway. They're not calming down, still very combative, still can't take care of themselves, whatever the issue is. And that hold can be extended to a 50-250, which is a 2-week hold, a 14-day hold. In the hospital that I worked at, that this was very common, but there's either a judge or a representative for the courts that comes to the hospital and holds hearings. So we write a new hold that essentially says this is still the symptoms, they still meet criteria, and then we actually have to do a short little court hearing there on the hospital grounds with the patient present. If in some ways they present in a way that they don't need to be held, then the hold is not upheld. If they are still very problematic and their symptoms are getting in the way of even them participating in the hearing, then typically the hold is upheld. And they stay in the hospital for another 14 days. After that, there's an even further hold, and that's a 30-day hold. There is such thing as a 6-month hold.
Never got into this. The follow-up album was Oh, You Ate One Too.
Yeah. So there's this stuff extends. Like, there's case law enough for there to be hearings and holds that extend. What is the most common thing is that if someone gets to a 30-day hold, they are typically a candidate for a conservatorship, an LPS conservatorship. So that means that the mental health professional that keeps writing these holds is now in charge of writing a conservatorship application, and it is extensive. I mean, these things are sometimes upwards of 50 pages, where you are writing all of the different parts of a person's functioning, what they struggle with, what it would be like for them out in the world, like all of this stuff in order to, again, we're just trying to keep people alive at this point. That's the whole point of a hold or a conservatorship. So that, I don't know what the pipeline was for Britney Spears. I don't know when this happened, but because she's not on an LPS conservatorship, I don't think it has anything to do with the holds that she was on, because that doesn't make any logical sense. It's not like she was on these extended holds and she got to a place where she was continually gravely disabled and needed a conservatorship application filed. I think what is most likely is that some sort of a plea was made that a probate conservatorship was more appropriate because she was never going to get back to any level of functioning. This is someone who has had like traumatic brain injury. They have such, dementia, like horrible dementia that they don't even know their names anymore. Therefore, they can't take care of themselves or make medical decisions. So something happened there that feels very fishy to me.
Yeah, just anecdotally, I've seen the Hulu New York Times documentary on Britney Spears. I'm an outsider here, and I don't have any expertise in either the law or the psychological evaluation that you're going into, Quincy. But just anecdotally, as like an average American citizen, it seems like Britney Spears is pretty badass. Like to do a Vegas residency, you can be stoned and do a Vegas residency. I mean, we know that.
I'm sure this happens.
We know that from Elvis.
Yeah.
But you also have to be highly competent to do that. Like, I just listened to an interview with Penn Jillette and Alec Baldwin today. I mean, you don't do a Vegas residency unless it's all about business. So
right.
It's hard for me. Like, you're talking about somebody who's really like somebody like whom I met and I did an art show with, and I talked about on the Adult Movie Podcast, Daniel Johnston, the musician. He was schizophrenic. He had to be committed, but it was because his father was an amateur pilot and he took over the controls and crashed the plane. And that's when, that's when he goes into, some sort of facility.
Yeah. I mean, I have so rarely seen a substance use disorder getting to a gravely disabled space, unless, of course, there's Korsakoff syndrome. There's all kinds of things that can happen from chronic substance abuse issues. But someone using drugs means that they need rehab. It doesn't mean that they need all of their rights taken away. And by the way, we're still arguing this as if it is an LPS conservatorship, but it wasn't. It was a probate conservatorship. This is like, there was some sort of brain damage that she was never going to come back from. Someone with brain damage or such diminished cognitive capacity can't show up for schedule. I bet she had a rehearsal schedule.
She sure
can't
did.
Choreograph moves. I bet she had to choreograph. Can't show up to things on time, dressed and but with like a clean face.
Okay. I want to hear Jazz talk about this because like that is literally Keith Richards for the majority of the time that the Rolling Stones were going concert.
That's just it. I mean, anyone can just about function, you know, like you can put your pants on or somebody can help you put your pants on right. And you can get on stage and you can do the thing that you've been doing for years. You know, that's what, that's mm-hmm. the kind of strange thing about this is that, okay, sure. Something happened. She needed to be, you know, squirreled away, taken care of to help with her issues. But the problem is that it just kept going on. It kept extending, you know, every year. Yes. They'd come around and they check in on it. And it was the same sort of like, oh, well, you know, well, she's still in a bad way. She still can't control her assets, which include, by the way, you know, her schedule, her finances, her health. We're talking about her bodily autonomy has come into the yes. news that apparently she couldn't make any decisions about that.
What do you mean bodily autonomy? Like, I mean, I understand that concept in general, but do you mean like she couldn't get, for example, Botox or like a nose
all
drop
of that has to be approved. Yes, you cannot have any medical procedures without your conservator saying that it is the right thing to do. She can't have an IUD. She can't go to a doctor without her conservator giving her permission. She can't have a dollar out of her bank account to pay for a doctor. She can't hire her own attorney.
Yeah, it's pretty it's pretty shady, I'm not gonna lie. And again, like this is someone that we just talked about. She was the host for a while on The X Factor. She's done Vegas. She's on Instagram. She has kids that she seems to be living like a pretty typical mm-hmm. you know, celebrity in the spotlight kind of life. Who doesn't have, you know, a rough patch here and there? So
I mean,
what's really going on?
She's an artist. Every artist right. has these. I mean, that's why they're artists, is that they right. experience everything that the normal person experiences, except a lot more. That's what yeah. makes them
that's
an
right.
artist. I mean, if
that's
you're
right.
going to apply this to Britney Spears, I mean, just imagine, you know, like, why isn't, if we're going to stay in the music world, if this is true, then why isn't Conor Oberst in a conservatorship? Or any other, or, you know, any other famous artist that is self-destructive or like, you know, why wasn't Amy Winehouse? But I guess that's a British situation, which maybe the laws are different, but I'm learning a lot here.
Well, I think that is the – when I was being trained on conservatorships and writing them, my supervisor at the time said – she made me, like, delete something. And she was like, just because you don't like their decisions does not mean that they deserve a conservatorship. That's not what you're evaluating them for. You're not evaluating someone on good life decisions. You're evaluating someone on whether they can keep themselves alive and even protect themselves from like financial manipulation from others. Those are the things that you're really managing with gravely disabled LPS. And probate, same. You're trying to sort of protect someone from those vulnerabilities, but protect themselves from making normal life decisions that are maybe different than what the rest of us would make. That's not our job.
Well, see, that's just
that's
it.
Not what we're supposed to do.
I mean, you know, she's a grown woman. She is, well, I think her net worth is something around $60 million. And her dad, Jamie Spears, has been her primary conservator, as far as I can tell, since the order in 2008. So he's been managing and even co-managing her affairs. He's been paying himself out of her money, which I find to be a little bit interesting.
Yeah, so this happens. So not in the way that Jamie's doing it, but when someone is put under a conservatorship, even if they're assigned to the Office of the Public Guardian, which is just like a normal person that is employed by the city or county, that kind of takes care of someone's business, like literally writes the checks for medical bills that have come in, that sort of thing, follows up, makes sure that they're talking to their attorney, all of those things. It's all in the hopes of helping this person kind of regain competency and move on in their life. But they do collect a small fee. So they like charge, a lot of these folks are under like Social Security benefits. And so there's a small charge to that for that service because people don't work for free, right? Sure. But it's very minimal. When you're talking about a dad that is not allowing his child, his adult child, to make any decisions on her own behalf. And the only time this is coming up in court is when he is petitioning for more money.
Right.
I mean, I think that's the thing that is so problematic, is that he is making a killing off of this, a killing. Yeah. And that seems problematic to me.
Jazz and Quincy, I mean, since you're more well read on this than myself, I mean, I've read the New Yorker article from earlier this summer by Ronan Farrow and Gio Tolentino, but it sounds to me like the proximate cause for the institution of this conservatorship was the fact that she had gotten married and she didn't sign a prenup. Mm-hmm. And that's when this cycle began, because her parents, you know, started freaking out that a considerable fortune could be on the line. So could we talk a little bit about that? Like, it seems that at some level, this has to do just with a business and not so much with a person.
Right.
I mean, that's, I think, where my antennas sort of go up with this, is that you just didn't like that she got married without a prenup. But again, being under a conservatorship is not about controlling someone's decisions so that they're more in line with what you think that they should do. Britney Spears has the right to run herself into the ground. As long as she is able to take care of herself, she can make cognitive decisions to give it all up if she wants to.
I mean, like
to
Kanye,
give it all away.
Kanye is a perfect example of this.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Yeah. You can't make somebody look after their mental health or anything like that, but that's really up to them. At the end of the day, you still have this whole idea of we're individuals with individual rights, and what somebody decides to do, as long as they're not hurting another person, or obviously if they're in the street hurting themselves, that's when you would, that temporary kind of hold that you were talking about earlier would come into play. But outside of that.
Yeah. So that's what the legal stuff is supposed to do, is just keep someone from dying.
Right.
Whether that's themselves or someone else, that they wouldn't become so gravely disabled that they stopped eating, or they weren't able to like know the difference between water and gasoline for what to drink. Like that's what we're working on here. And so for this stuff to get so far down the road,
right,
where we're no longer there. She knows the difference between water. She knows which costumes to put on. She is in a place where she's even been asking to hire her own attorneys by function of being ask for something
painting.
Yes. Yeah. By function of being able to do all of that, the conservatorship is in question.
Right.
It is automatically in question.
The other sort of like legal-ish side of this is, if she was so disabled, why does she have custody of her kids?
Yep.
You know, like that doesn't wow. track for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If she is just so just, incapable in sitting in a chair and, you know, staring out the window unresponsibly, like then how does she have custody of her kids? That doesn't even make sense. You know?
Right.
So how can we square that circle? Or is that just something that just has to be, you know, answered by the court, hopefully sooner rather than later?
Well, I think it shouldn't be squared.
Yeah.
It should sort of sit in all of us in this like really yuck sort of way, mm-hmm. because she does, I think at last reading, I think she has 50% custody, which means that 50% of the time she's able to like give baths and eat, feed and, you know, do all the things that we do as parents.
Right. So
I want to drop the Jesus bomb into the chat.
You've been waiting okay. to do this, haven't you?
We from the time many, many years long gone, we have seen countless articles on what does Britney Spears believe? And I, you know, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, there was a lot of press coverage on her getting involved in Kabbalah. However you want to pronounce it.
I think it's Kabbalah.
Jewish Kabbalah.
yeah, let's go with Kabbalah.
There was a lot of press coverage of that, you know, when Madonna was big into it. And we all know that her parents, she grew up Southern Baptist. She's from Louisiana. And her parents, Jamie and
Lynn,
are both still devout evangelical Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And Lynn Spears wrote a memoir last year, and just, you know, full disclosure, I mean, I haven't read the book cover to cover, but I do know that she went on Pat Robertson's, you know, CBN, like, Christian Broadcasting Network, you know, 700 mm-hmm. Club type stuff. And said that the main point of the, you know, for her, of her, of the book and of her life, is that Britney would come back to faith in Christ.
Oh, Lord.
By controlling her.
Yeah. So I want to bring that in. Like, here again, we see mm-hmm. that, and just another like relevant, and this is in the Ronan Farrow article, Jamie had become friends with a business manager named Lou Taylor, who they go to church together. And this manager is the spouse of her husband, is the pastor of their evangelical, presumably Southern Baptist church. And that is the person that, as far as I can tell, was really a change agent in this whole thing. So to me, I'm very interested in the angle of how religious authority, religious mm-hmm. Control of the bodies of women come into play. And I'd like to throw that out to both of you, and, you know, both related to Britney Spears and in general, talk about that.
Take it away, Jazz.
Well, you know, you bring up a great point, Greg, as Quincy and I were talking about this as well, this idea of intersectionality between, you know, like the relationships with parents, with kids, as well as mm-hmm. churches and institutions, and this kind of weird little web that starts to form. And it seems like, at least from the outside, that Britney, try as she might, has never been able to kind of get out of that. You know, she even back in the day, you know, she did like the Catholic schoolgirl outfit and was oh so mm-hmm. naughty in all the videos, and mm-hmm. you know, was all the things that you're not supposed to be in church, you know, all the things that you're surely, you know, gonna mm-hmm. you know, Satan is heating his pokers for you, you know what I mean, to mm-hmm. try to get you for. So, you know, it seems to me that in a way, like, that was some kind of a rebellion, because she had creative control over that. Mm-hmm. You know, so it seems like she was aware that all of those things that she came from there was something kind of weird in there. So I don't know, maybe that was sort of her cry to get out in a way. I don't know, pure speculation, but that's kind of what it looks like.
There, so I'm about to get psychoanalytic here.
Uh-oh. Please. Which is how I that's what this show is about. Please get psychoanalytic with us. Please, Dr. Quincy. Lay it down.
I feel like Britney Spears represents something that is haunting and so dangerous to the church. Her womanhood, her early sexuality, her hip-hugging jeans, her talking about these, like, you know, I mean, when I think about her, one of my favorites, I have many, many Britney Spears songs, but like the song Work Bitch.
Yes.
Like that, it confronts everything, the fragile sense of self that those who do not look internal but look external in order to find some sort of validation that they are living their lives the way that they're supposed to, that creates a fragile internal world. And that is always going to be susceptible to someone like Britney Spears or anyone else that challenges what we all want. We all want to be sexy and revved up and dance around on a floor and like feel good about it. Like we all long for some version of that. And when she's doing it and it's in direct contrast with everything that you've been told in the world is okay, like she's threatening. She is always going to be the threatening force that has to in some ways be managed and contained. And this conservatorship gave someone the power to manage and contain her.
Wow. Yeah. that's pretty frightening, honestly, to grow up in that environment where it's pretty clear that the hierarchy is very real, and as is, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and go there, the patriarchy is very real. Mm-hmm. You know, so which is why you're seeing this happen with Britney but not with another artist. Mm-hmm. You know, that might be a man. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what we're seeing, is that, oh, well, a woman, she's obviously just unstable and she just can't take care of her things and she's just fragile, you know, this, that, and the other, whatever excuses, whether they're made, you know, in a quote unquote biblical way, you know, that the woman needs to be protected by the man, mm-hmm. you know, bless her heart, or just in society in general, like, oh, well, you know, women are just weak and, you know, they don't want to actually take care of anything. They want a man mm-hmm. to take charge, that sort of idea. So it's almost like in a weird way, the system is complicit.
Yes. The system is the salve that like moves all of this along, that sort of moves this from the next, from one problematic space like the evangelical church growing up to the next problematic space, which is, you know, the pop culture world and now the legal world.
Right. I mean, thank goodness for Free Britney. Like, can we talk about that hashtag for just a second?
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's just so much information. We're information overload all day, every day, whether we're watching TV, all the social media things, our feeds are constantly blowing up. But Free Britney got through. And at first it was like, what do you mean, you know, Free Britney? Like, you know, we all know about Britney, but like, what does this mean? And it became almost like a rallying cry, right?
Yeah. So I think that we should have like a 10-part series on freaking conspiracy theories, because this is fascinating. But what is so infuriating to me about this coming to fruition, or this thing being a thing that was real, is that it also creates deep distrust in systems at a time when we are in a fucking pandemic. And we need to be trusting the people in charge.
Yes.
It totally undermines this thing. So we're being told to trust, trust, trust. And then you find out someone has had her rights ripped away and it's all kind of slinky and it shouldn't have happened the way that it does. And it causes deep fright. And it also means that the next time a conspiracy theory comes up, we're much more susceptible to listen to it.
Ew.
Yeah.
I mean, like that. That's... I mean, that's very, very, that's so profound that I think that everyone across the the one thing that I find to be fascinating about the Free Britney phenomenon is that across the ideological divide, people are trying to glom onto it because it's so morally, apparently common sense problematic. Like, you know that there's virtually nothing that I would agree with Ted Cruz on. But I mean, he's using the hashtag Free Britney. And I love that scene in The Righteous Gemstones, which if our listeners have not seen Righteous Gemstones, I beg, nay, implore you to check out Righteous Gemstones on HBO. When Baby Billy's, new wife, she wants to be called Aunt Tiffany, even though she's, you know, younger than the siblings in the Righteous Gemstones. She sits down at a piano and she says, "I know two songs, Amazing Grace and Toxic." You know, that just shows how
that's amazing.
Yes,
that just shows how Britney Spears is a true artist, because that's what art does. Yes. It penetrates the subconscious of everyone in a culture. Like, that's what Andy Warhol did. That's what Basquiat did. That's what Frida Kahlo did. That's what Georgia O'Keeffe did. My employment is through a studio art school. To me, that the fact that Britney is painting is evidence that she's signaling, I am an artist and I'm not this helpless person. I have agency. And the way I can express that is not only through music, but it's through painting. And she says she doesn't want to perform anymore, but you know what? Like, I will say it right now. If she wants to put together a show, an art show in New York City, Britney, call me. I will find the biggest, baddest gallery in Tribeca or Chelsea, and we will make this happen.
Well, for me, the way that I interpreted her not wanting to perform was her last vestige of power. I mean, she was being worked like a workhorse, and it was only increasing her father's power over her, because the more wealth she has, the more resources he has in order to continue to hire, or whatever he's doing behind the scenes, the right people to uphold this. So for me, whenever she refused to work, it was like, I'm not giving you any more power.
Right.
You already have everything. This is my last thing that I can do.
But that was a protest.
That it was a protest. Yeah. Now, if someone can protest with such sophistication, again, it calls into question the very conservatorship that they're under.
And I think that's what these Instagram videos from the past couple of weeks have been about. It's like her saying, I'm looking into the camera and saying, I'm going to do something that is intelligently provocative to show that I have agency outside. I am hyper, not only aware, but hyper aware of what is being foisted upon me. And so I'm going to use the channels that I can use to speak. So we're kind of coming into the home stretch here.
I think so.
On this conversation. But I think this is a question that we can ask at the end of every episode. We're the Multiple Sources podcast. What source would you recommend people look into when they're thinking not only about the issue of this particular issue, but conservatorship, but of the more broad issue of women's bodies and who controls them? Quincy?
Good question. I have so many.
That's multiple sources. So knock yourself out.
So when it comes to Britney Spears and kind of what's going on in her case, I really appreciate women writers putting together all of the different sources and speaking very clearly about what it's like to be repressed in some sort of legal or medical sense. There's been a couple of articles, we'll put them all in the show notes, but that has actually been a helpful way for me to be like, oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way. Because they're speaking from what it's like, from the perspective of what it's like to be a woman that does not have control or body autonomy in whatever space. And we all experience that in some ways. So I think that those articles are super helpful. And they also give sort of an anthology of like Britney Spears and how all of this has come to be. So I will link some of those. As far as body autonomy, I will just mention that I am a huge, huge fan of, as a trauma therapist, I'm a huge fan of paying attention to our bodies and taking care of our bodies in a way that helps our mental health. I will also say that it has infuriated me in the last few months to see some of the feminist body autonomy language be co-opted by the anti-vaxxers and the QAnoners and things like that, because it totally pees in the Cheerios of what we've all been working towards. And so I think what I'll do, instead of trying to come up with anything right now on the spot, I will list in the show notes some books that I think might be really helpful around trauma in the body, body autonomy, and like our feminist revolution around being able to control our bodies. How about that?
Great. That gets the Agent Cooper damn fine cup of coffee.
No, wait, hang on a second. Very quickly. Who the hell is Agent Cooper?
Oh my gosh.
Oh dear. What have I done?
You have
Am I supposed to know who this is?
You've touched the third rail. You've committed maybe not an unpardonable sin, but definitely a venial sin.
Oh, well, well done me. And
I kind of don't really believe in sin, but
go big or go home. That's what I believe in.
Stepped into it. So Agent Cooper is the protagonist in David Lynch's Twin Peaks. And I would highly recommend.
Oh, okay.
I don't blame anyone, because it came out in the early 90s, and it's highly weird. And David Lynch is, a mysterious figure. And I would really love to have David Dark come on to talk about David Lynch at some point, and maybe some other people who are David Lynch allies. David Lynch adjacent. But anyway, that's Agent.
In my defense, I did actually watch the first season when it came out on Netflix years ago. Like, I don't even know when this was on. This was on like 8 or 9 years ago on Netflix. And I thought, oh, Twin Peaks, I'd never seen that. So I watched the first season. I was like, okay, it's kind of weird, but I'm with it. And then the second season happened and it just lost me. And I just thought, okay, right, well, so, I'm just going to go ahead and just shuffle this one.
You're correct. Out of my mind. And I will send you a 5-hour explainer video on YouTube.
Oh, God, please don't. I don't know if I can
write this whole thing down. Jazz, what are the sources that you think? You know, what are different inputs, different sources? What should our listeners be thinking about reading that might be, you know, not precisely on this issue, but might help them think through this broader issue?
When, in terms of reading, I think Quincy will probably have a much greater insight into the kinds of resources people should be looking at in terms of books. But I would encourage people to go online. Just go ahead and do it. Find that Twitter person, find that YouTube account, and just listen to women. Like, look up Google accounts of women talking about what it's like, you know, and get it straight, because not everyone's experience is the same, most certainly, you know. But when you talk about somebody do you know Jamie Lee Finch? She's on Twitter, and she's like an embodiment coach, and she
adding her talks now.
Yes, please do. She's all about getting people comfortable and friendly with their bodies, especially folks who came up in a religious kind of a setting where you're made to feel like your body isn't yours. You're made to feel like the things that you are as a human being aren't appropriate or aren't good enough or not holy, those kinds of things. So she helps people bring that noise level down and kind of face themselves. So those are the kinds of people I would think about checking out, you know, people who have been through that sort of thing themselves, have come out and can speak directly to that. You know, I know, Quincy, you have your own history with various types of religious trauma, but there are certainly people who put out books and all sorts of things who are not actually familiar. They make themselves an expert, say, academically, but not experientially. So actually seeing someone go through that and be able to come out of it is an inspiration to other people to say, hey, you know, maybe I can do that, you know, or maybe I didn't even realize that I felt that badly about myself. You know, that the sorts of self-awareness things, like, why am I shaming my daughter that, and like, whenever she puts on shorts that are, you know, God forbid, 2 inches above the knee, you know, why do I do those things? You know, where are those kinds of behaviors coming from? So that's what I would suggest.
Okay, Gregory, take us home. What would you add to our list?
Well, follow Dr. Quincy on Instagram.
100%. Yes.
Follow Jazz Robertson on Twitter. I'm going to represent my two co-hosts. For me, for this episode, because there is the painting dimension for Britney Spears, this is completely coming through a different quadrant, but I highly recommend Jerry Salt's book, How to Be an Artist, because it gives an insight into the fact that deep down we're all artists in some way, but maybe are too afraid to express that. And to me, the fact that Britney is painting, in addition to the fact that she is an amazing artist, you know, a choreographer, dancer, she is, she's like quintuple, octuple threat, you know, in terms of art. Jerry Salt's book, How to Be an Artist, is something that I think would give a lot of imaginative sympathy to not only Britney Spears, but other people like her and other people like you.
I love that.
I love it. I love it. Okay, all of this is going to be available in the show notes. This was a humdinger of a first episode, you guys.
Ooh, we did it.
We did it. I'm proud of us. Okay, we'll be back next time.
Explorer, you know.
Oh.
We did it. Hooray.
I'm going to make that the show music now. Thank you for that.
Okay, I love us. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Yes, next
week. Bye.